Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, for our show on Thursday, we are taking your suggestions for dealing with picky eaters. We're collecting these on our website. This will be for part two of our month-long conversation about food with Brooklyn writer Melanie Rahak. Is it true every family has one picky eater? Was it you? What's your advice to find peace and nutrition at the dinner table? You can post your comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see the link under the Coming Soon banner because it's coming Thursday when we talk about it on the air. We want your suggestions for dealing with picky eaters. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Post yours in the Coming Soon file, and we'll talk about them on the air on Thursday. Now, the midterm elections have shifted the balance of power in Washington. They were, depending on who you ask, historic, sweeping, and a referendum on 2 years of President Obama's policy or not. But what will the midterm elections and the Republicans retaking control of the House mean for people trying to advance a specific interest? We're going to check in now on a few niche issues that we were covering before the election and see what their prognosis is going forward. Our first niche interest is net neutrality, which by every definition took a blow as a political cause on Tuesday. The Progressive Change Campaign Committee had a list of 95 candidates who publicly supported the tenets of net neutrality, that is, government regulation and control of the Internet to guarantee equal access to all websites, regardless of who your Internet service provider is. Well, all 95 of these candidates who publicly supported the tenets of net neutrality lost last Tuesday. Siva Vaidyanathan, Associate Professor of Media Studies and Law at the University of Virginia, joins us now to tell us what that means for net neutrality and Internet access and where the cause might go in the coming 112th Congress. Hey, Siva, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Brian. Good to be here.
Now, zero for 95 is more than a shellacking, to use a famous word. It's a shutout. Who are those 95? Because obviously there are still incumbent Democrats who got reelected who support net neutrality.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can reasonably claim that large numbers of people or even one person went to the polls with the idea that net neutrality would be the bulwark issue, right? The deciding issue.
Not even you, Siva?
No, there are so many other things working. I think clearly net neutrality, though, suffered as collateral damage in last week's election. So these 95 are almost all Democrats, and what's basically happened is a really interesting shift in the sort of the backroom politics of net neutrality, because for some years, whether you were for net neutrality or against net neutrality, it didn't necessarily indicate what political party or whether you were liberal or conservative. The supporters of network neutrality have always had very strong conservative supporters, largely because a lot of conservatives have relished the idea that an open and free Internet could give them voice in an otherwise shut out media system. And so for the most part, over the past 10 years, we've seen groups like the Christian Coalition, for instance, and varieties of gun owners groups support network neutrality. Huh. And it's had pretty strong ideological support among conservatives, among Republicans, because of the very idea of a level playing field and the idea that the Internet's one of those great places where anyone can break a product and be an entrepreneur at relatively low cost. So in many ways, it's a free market dream, right? So, but in recent years, you've seen this really interesting shift with Glenn Beck and the Tea Party coming out against net neutrality and twisting it into some sort of government control claim, which, you know, really doesn't stand up to the facts. But you know, it's clear to me that certain elements of the Tea Party, especially early on, were astroturf expressions of big lobbyists, and the big lobbyists mm-hmm. tend to work for the telecom companies. And so you end up with this really difficult political moment where defending network neutrality, which should be sort of common sense in many areas, is that much harder because people have this sort of, you know, allergic reaction to the idea of government intervention, even if that intervention is to maintain a free market.
Right. Well, maintain a free market on the one hand. On the other hand, I guess the the free market philosophy would say that even with respect to very large companies like these big telecom companies, if they are not regulated by the government, if they can do what they want, even if that means making it harder for individuals to access certain websites, harder for small companies to compete in the market, even though everybody loves to love small business, the philosophy is that that will work itself out in the long run because companies will have to, you know, respond to consumers.
Yeah, sure, if there's competition, which, of course, in most of the country there really is not. The other thing that, look, conservatives really should be worrying about is Comcast is in the process of taking over NBC. If at some point Comcast decides to favor its own products over competing products in video distribution in some field down the line, not out of the question, you're going to see MSNBC flow a lot better and a lot clearer than Fox News products over Comcast services. This is unlikely to happen soon, but the fact is these companies are looking for better ways to leverage their products and services in the short term, and they're not concerned about maintaining a competitive and open environment. And if network neutrality slips away from us while Washington dithers about it, it's going to be a long time before we even notice how much we've lost.
I guess that's the that's what's needed to flip the script and all of a sudden make network neutrality a cause of the Republicans. If some provider gives MSNBC a leg up over Fox News Channel.
Exactly. And you know what? If you think that Google is biased against you, if you think YouTube is biased against you, if you think that Microsoft's biased against you, then you really want a situation, an environment in which the next really smart people can come up with a competing service, a competing industry, and that's really only going to happen in those rare moments when we have an open and level playing field.
All right, we're looking at implications of last week's election that you might not have thought about. There it is for net neutrality or network neutrality on the internet. Siva Vaidyanathan, associate professor of media studies and law at the University of Virginia. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Next, if the election was bad for supporters of net neutrality, it might have been better for members of another niche, the Freelancers Union. That collection of New York area freelancers had tagged some top priority candidates, all Democrats, who did well last week. Eric Schneiderman for New York State Attorney General, Tony Avella for New York State Senate from Queens, Tim Bishop, the incumbent congressman on Long Island and Suffolk County. That race is still up in the air. But the other two bucked the anti-democratic trend in their races and seem poised to help advance the cause of the freelancer going forward, at least according to Sarah Horowitz, the executive director of the Working Today Freelancers Union, who has the update on this election and freelancing. Hey, Sarah, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Why did you focus on these races? Like, why does it matter to the Freelancers Union who the state attorney general is?
Because what we are really building is this next safety net for this new workforce. And what we are looking at is who are the candidates and the elected officials that are going to partner with us to actually build this. So we looked at it very strategically in terms of not just the individual. Do we like this candidate? Is he or she, and in New York, of course, mostly he, a good candidate? But let's look at this broadly and say, if we endorse a whole group of people, do we have a better chance of passing legislation in Albany? And so for us, that's what this election means.
What kind of legislation?
Well, right now we have legislation pending in Albany so that if a freelancer does work and doesn't get paid, the Department of Labor would have jurisdiction. Now, that might sound really kind of a boring way to put it, but what it means is it's saying there is this whole new workforce. People are working. They're going from job to job and project to project in the middle of this recession. And whenever something happens to them, they don't have a place to go because the laws were really written for a manufacturing workplace, so only employees can go to the Department of Labor. So it's kind of crazy that we find ourselves in this situation, but the only way that we're going to update these laws and these regulations is if freelancers mobilize, vote, and start thinking about how we're going to actually make the future happen in a way that's helpful to freelancers.
What you just described, is that the so-called deadbeat client bill?
Yes, it is.
Is there enough of a freelancer market around the country, especially in this economy, that the Freelancers Union is moving toward being a national institution, or that these issues that you've just been mentioning become national issues that might be taken up by Congress?
Yes. You know, it's really both. So what we're seeing is that because New York is now really advancing way ahead of any other state, this would be the third piece of legislation, which is part of a whole group of legislative changes that are, in effect, this next safety net. And so we're modeling this in New York. As you can imagine, we've started going to our congressional delegation in New York and saying, and are saying, please start introducing this in Washington. And we have met with a lot of interest to do that. At the same time, we look at our membership, and it's really in New York, California, as you could imagine, but Chicago, Florida, Pennsylvania, Texas. It's really across the whole country. And what we're talking about is really a whole set of national laws that are really in sync with the way people are working. And I really do feel like there's actually something different here, that we can't be thinking about going back to the New Deal and just this idea that everything is just going to come from government, that we have to start thinking, just as manufacturing has to start building things again in America, so too do we have to have civil society that actually does something. So as you know, we started an insurance company here, and I think that that's a model that the progressive world has to take on. We're just not going to see a robust activist government like we did 100 years ago. We have to actually start thinking about it a little bit more DIY, you know, on our own end, and taking some responsibility for building it.
Why Tim Bishop, by the way? Out of all the Democrats for Congress in our area, did you single him out for endorsement because he's particularly supportive of some freelancers' issues?
Yes. I mean, in fact, he really has seen his what really has made him continue to be elected, and fingers crossed for this last part of the vote count, has been really the working class of Long Island. And it's interesting because his district, of course, includes the Hamptons, but it mostly includes people from Brookhaven and other parts of Long Island, where Smithtown, where people who are really getting crushed in this economy are trying to figure out you know, how to get support that they need. And he's seeing the changes in the workforce where people are increasingly freelance, whether they're lower income or whether they're middle class professionals. And so I think because of that orientation, he really wants to be nimble and adapt and see how to help the new workforce. I have to say, you know, in doing these kinds of endorsements and speaking with the candidates, I have been impressed that elected officials are able to be nimble. They count their votes in their districts, too, and see that as it changes, if they want to stay in office, they have to adapt. And I actually appreciate that because, again, you know, at the Freelancers Union, it would be great, you know, to have all our elected officials just be friends, but it's actually that we really want to see something in terms of this next safety net. And social movements need to educate elected officials and need to educate membership to actually make this happen so it's not just ideas.
Sarah Horowitz, Executive Director of the Working Today Freelancers Union. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, one more group that had a lot riding on this election that you might not have thought about before, those Americans who are interested in or even employed by NASA and the space program. To fill us in on the prognoses for space funding in John Boehner's America is Tariq Malik, Managing Editor for Space.com. Tariq, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
So a bipartisan NASA authorization bill signed by President Obama last month allocated $19 billion to NASA next year, which is up slightly from NASA's budget this year of $18.3 billion. But the funding for that bill hasn't made it through the appropriations process in Congress yet. Is there concern that the new Republican focus on discretionary spending will mean that NASA money is on the chopping block?
You know, it is a serious concern for NASA right now, because they are waiting for this final approval to really get started with their new space plan under the direction of President Obama. NASA's shuttle fleet is retiring next year. They're hoping to plan more ambitious missions to asteroids or maybe even Mars. But to do that, they need to make sure that they've got the funding in hand to finish flying the space shuttle missions that they want, and then get started with these new programs. The Congress and President both signed off on that plan last month, but they have to fund it now, and that's what NASA's worried about. Because if Republican leader John Boehner does succeed in rolling back a non-discretionary or non-defense funding to 2008 levels, that would be a serious dip for NASA.
Other than that, is there generally a Republican versus a Democratic approach to managing the space program?
Well, there are key committees that oversee NASA's spending in the House right now, and two of those committees are set to be basically a change of leadership from Democrats to Republicans, which could basically affect how the agency gets funded.
And that's Frank Wolf, Congressman Frank Wolf, Republican from Virginia, and Republican Ralph Hall from Texas, who both won re-election. I gather they're expected to assume leadership of these key NASA oversight committees, correct?
That's correct. They're likely to take charge, and they've been staunch opponents to the Obama space plan as well, seeing that it criticizing that it cedes leadership of America's role in space to others, and is a step backwards. So it could be a big challenge just getting through those committees alone.
Leadership in what? What do they say that the Obama administration ceded to other countries regarding space?
Well, the looming gap in U.S. access to orbit, basically the retirement of the space shuttle, which would leave the NASA and its American its partners in the space station dependent on Russia and other space programs in Japan and Europe, just to launch people and supplies to the International Space Station for several years, at least five, has been the estimate. Until a new American vehicle is available. And then, of course, the reliance on commercial space companies to build those American vehicles and launch astronauts and cargo into space.
So then the Republican position would be that the U.S. should be spending more on the space program, it sounds like, which runs head-on into the Boehner proposal to roll back all discretionary spending by 2 years.
That's right. You know, the idea is there's a concept of this role of superiority or leadership that the shuttle has been a figurehead for, and then that gap, not having that fundamental access to space on a U.S. vehicle, has been their big plan, their big concern. The cancellation of the replacement program for the space shuttle, the Constellation program, by the Obama administration earlier this year, has been another large target of criticism among the Republicans, because that did nix the American program that was going to follow that up.
Well, we will see what happens. Tariq Malik, managing editor for Space.com. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And there you have implications of last week's election that you might not have thought about for three niche groups: freelancers, the space program, and net neutrality on the Internet. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, we will meet three winners of the Great Urban Hack. Remember, we talked about it on Friday. That's where journalists and programs came together over this past weekend to design instant apps that are useful around the city. We'll check them out.